Jermaine Lon, Jermaine Lons. Oh, fuck's sake, it's going to be a long season. We're back, refreshed after our first summer off in a couple of years, myself and Gareth Barker, that is anyway. We promised to have a production meeting over the summer to improve the show. How did that go, Gareth?
It didn't.
There you go.
Busy, you had other things happened.
Yeah. All right, Gareth's had a child. Well done, we've all got them. Okay, move on, right.
Harsh.
No.
Very harsh.
We've done our congratulations privately. Yeah, Michael's even brought the bear a present and everything. Don't make out like we're...
Yeah, you were in there straight away trying to find out where it is before you, and look, he's probably going to sell it.
Yeah.
Grinding, isn't he?
No, back on that. The first one of the season, we'll get Grinding in already. Right, Into the Light is back to... with a new sponsor next season. Unfortunately, not with a new pundit, though, the lad Proctor again, and we've roped him in today as well.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Nice summer.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much.
Have you enjoyed not being involved in football so much?
Yeah, it's been nice. It feels like a bit of a longer break this summer as well, but just looking forward to the start of the season now. I think everyone is. You think you're going to enjoy the summer, don't you? Then by the time the end gets here, you're desperate for the football to start
again. You do the first month or something, don't you?
Yeah.
I do anyway.
The first couple of weeks was all right, and then you get bored on a weekend, don't you? And want to go to games and watch the games on telly on a Sunday as well. So, yeah, I'm ready for the season to start now.
Get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Sunderland lose to... the third division American team.
Yeah,
but that's what I did. I did that. It was great. It was really good. Yeah.
I know we had a couple of sponsors last season for Into the Light, but I'm kind of disappointed we won't hear the prices so low even Pantaleon can't get down to save them.
I'm sure we'll get some more good strap lines ready for the new season.
I'm sure they will, but it was a bit iconic, that one, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it? It was
a bit of a cult status.
It did have a cult status, yeah, it did. So whoever wrote that, I think it was Sergio wrote that, apparently, and we were told not to tell him because he'd get a big head. So you've just done that. Hopefully he's not listening to this.
No, I doubt it.
Okay. He won't be, but he's busy coming up with strap lines.
Well, we'll speak to some people later on the show about new signings and all that, if that's your thing and that like. But, Michael, first of all, Dick Advocaat staying, welcome news.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's anyone in the city that was disappointed about him coming back. I think it's a good move from the club to keep pursuing him and to try and sort of convince him to come back. And I think he's come back for the right reasons as well. It doesn't seem as if it's for financial gain or anything like that. You know, you see his reaction at the back end of the season and how delighted he was that we managed to stay up. And it seems like he's come back for the good of the club, which is fantastic news. And also when you saw the other people whose names are in the frame, you know, I think Dick Advocaat was really the only one that stood out for me. And
nothing inspiring there, was there?
Not really, and nothing of the calibre of Dick Advocaat, and especially the job he did with us last season, you know, and in such a short time frame to get the players performing in the manner he did and get everyone really galvanised and pull everyone together is something that we've been lacking for a few seasons now. So you hope for a season of stability and a season of improvement and steady growth.
But see, every summer.
That was my next line. You know, we always hope for that, don't we? And I suppose all football fans hope for that. But I think we've got a better chance this season than we've had for a long time. And you hope with a couple of new signings as well, then the future's going to look bright.
Can you have stability with a manager who's coming in that's just going to be here for 12 months? Because I know Kevin Phillips was talking out, wasn't he, about
that's,
it saying...
that's why you got Congan, haven't you? That's the point. That's the whole point.
I understand that, Gareth, but I'm that's just asking point, the opinion. Because didn't Phillips come and say that players go and sign for managers generally, and then if you're going to go and sign for a manager...
I don't think that's the case anymore. Oh, look at that. I mean, we were talking before came on about that lad at Villa, you know, and the comments he made where he's turned up and said, I'm looking forward to moving on to a bigger club if it goes well, basically, in his first press conference. So, you know, I don't think that's necessarily true that players sign for managers anymore.
Those comments have come back to haunt Super Kev anyway, because Leicester's manager's gone now, so they're signing. they're signed for Pearson, and they're like, he's not there anymore. Super Kev.
Do you think when Leicester signed Kamaric that he was like, "Well, I'd really like to work with Nigel Pearson"? Do you think he was thinking, "Oh, that would be a good move for me to work with Nigel Pearson"? Maybe, do you think he'd ever heard
like
of Nigel
somebody
Pearson?
With a bit of fight and...
Well, do you think he'd ever heard of Nigel Pearson before he got to Leicester?
Know. You know, the Premier League's a global game, Gareth.
I know, but Nigel Pearson, though, have you seen him?
I think to a certain extent, players will sign for a manager if they feel he can improve them, if they can inspire him, and you know, if it's someone that they really look to and respect. So in that sense, then yes, Dick Advocaat has those qualities that he might be able to attract players that maybe another manager won't be able to.
He signed a players work with previously anyway, so that would
yeah, of
suggest
course.
That it's not really relevant.
I think long term, your question there about the sort of long term stability, I think having a year to find Dick Advocaat's successor gives us an opportunity to find the right man. It's important that Lee Congerton now sort of with Dick Advocaat, that he imposes a style of football and gives us an identity. That's what Sunderland have been lacking for a long time now, an identity, and we seem to sign players that a manager wants to sign rather than players that the club want to sign and that fit the club and fit the ethos of the club. And for a long time we've made the same mistakes and we've ended up having a huge turnover of players and a majority haven't been good enough. So you'd hope that Lee Congerton along with Dick Advocaat would sign players that would fit into a system that Sunderland are going to play long term, that are going to fit into the system for the next manager and the manager after that, and that we get a manager that fits how our players are rather than change the manager, change the whole squad. Football doesn't work like that anymore.
I think the word ethos.
Good word that is.
I think we're stuck in our third season in the Premier League. We've like done it over and over again, and we haven't gone on from there. And we've got to avoid that next year. It's interesting. If I read on Twitter the other day, some of the Palace guys that we speak to, they had made a comment saying that like Palace fans complaining that they haven't, like, there's not going to be another big signing or something like that. And I think it makes me think of our position when maybe we'd stayed up a bit and we were hankering for these big names. Mm. And it doesn't always work out, spending all that money. And I mean, they've also already signed Kabay, which is like a ridiculous
just
signing,
good to
really,
see.
You look at them.
You look at Palace's squad for next year, and Bolasie, Zaha, Kabay, they've got some top players
this
there.
This is what keeps happening in
Sunderland.
Yednak's
already there.
It?
They've got some top players
it's
there.
What happens to Sunderland, though, constantly. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were saying that we were laughing about how Stoke came and signed all of the players who were surplus to requirements at the Stadium of Light, and they've still ended up overtaking us and establishing themselves faster than we have.
But I think even with Stoke, they had Tony Pulis for a long time, and he had a certain style of play. Then Mark Hughes has come in, and he's got a slightly different style of play. He plays with a little bit more pace and keeps the ball on the floor a little bit more. But a lot of the players that Tony Pulis has had there for years have slotted seamlessly into Mark Hughes' style of play, and their recruitment of manager after Tony Pulis was first class. And I think that's what Sunderland have got to do now. We have to be looking to find the next manager now, and I'm sure the club are doing that, and I'm sure Dick Advocaat will have a big say in that as well.
I want you to maybe be a myth buster for us here. A lot of people complaining about Sunderland losing, as Gareth said, to some of these like third division American sides and stuff, but as a former player, it is relevant, isn't it, that this is a side mid-season and you've travelled over the side of the world, you haven't played a game or you've played one game?
I think there's a lot of factors to take into account, isn't it? As you said, they've travelled a long way. I know when they arrived in America, they had a long travel as well from the base to the ground that they played at. As you said, the American sides are in the middle of their season, so that you know they're ready to be playing football. Sunderland a long way from that, two and a half, three weeks away from playing a real competitive match. So there's those factors to consider. There was a lot of changes made. Dick Advocaat's trying to impose his style of play again on the players and get them playing. And players are just finding their way into fitness as well. They're not going to be going flat out 100 mile an hour as they will be in the first game of a Premier League season. So,
and do you know if you're an established first team player, do you know that when you take out the field for the first couple of times, I don't care if we win this game or not, you just want to get through the game? Is there an element of that to it?
I don't think you'll ever go onto a football pitch thinking you don't care if you win the game. They'll be competitive and they'll want to win. Of course they will. I think there's an element where you won't be as bothered should you not win the game, because you understand that it's part of a process, and as long as you're ready for the 8th of August, then what comes before that doesn't matter. What I would say is that it would be nice for the players to get a couple of wins under the belt before then. What you don't want to do is go through a losing pre-season where you lose every game, and regardless of anyone says, it doesn't matter, it's pre-season, it's irrelevant. it becomes relevant the closer you get to the season, and you want to be finding form, you want to hit the ground running as soon as you start playing your competitive games. So yes, they'll be taking it easy, and they'll be looking at it with a sense of perspective, thinking that the results don't matter and it's about performance levels, it's about fitness levels. But Dick Advocaat will want to see improvement. He'll want to see players understanding what he wants from them tactically. He want to see players who were fighting to be in the first 11 come the first game of the season, because again, there's a lot of competition for places, so players are going to want to put on a good show pre-season so that they can be involved.
What are your thoughts on the I know Sunderland have gone to America, and we've been to America a couple of times. I think we went under Mick McCarthy before the 15 point season, so it was a real beneficial trip. And now the top clubs all seem to, you know, I mean, Tottenham played two games at the end of the season, and now they're going all over the place. You've got, you know, Manchester United, I think last year, when it was ridiculous, they were in like Singapore, Australia. Is there a point where you've just got to say, as a manager maybe, I don't know, I just think I don't see how it can be beneficial to a group of players to be sitting
money
on
talks,
a tube,
though,
on a tube in the air for 24 hours breathing recycled air when they're trying to get fit as professional footballers to play proper football matches. I don't think Sunderland as a club, as a necessity, needs to go to America. I mean, I know we're playing Toronto FC, but the other teams have played. They're playing in like the third division of US football. I don't really
see why. They need it commercially, though, don't they?
But commercially, I mean, commercially, you know, what benefit is it to go and play those teams?
I think there's an element to what you're saying that I absolutely agree with. I think Louis van Gaal said it, didn't he? That Manchester United's pre-season last year, they travelled so far that he didn't agree with it, and it didn't get the players ready for the start of the season. Ultimately, we're a football club, and we have to make sure the players are ready to play football in a football league before the start of the season. So I think the football side has to take priority, and it shouldn't be sort of overshadowed by the commercial side of things. Whether or not it has such a dramatic detrimental effect on the players' fitness or anything like that.
Recycled air, as Gareth says.
But might not be that, but there's a lot of jet lag. They're travelling across time zones. They're doing a lot of travel, sitting down and stiffening up and whatnot. And recovery as well, especially these days, is so important that, you know, the players will come in the day after a game and get massage and things like that. So if you're travelling the day after a game, then of course it's going to have an effect, and it might mean that takes you a little bit longer to recover from the games. But I'm sure the club have sort of balanced it all up. The positives, I'm sure, outweigh the negatives. But it's certainly a question of like the modern day game, isn't it? As you said about Tottenham going away at the back end of the season, you wonder if that might have a knock-on effect because the players haven't had as much rest over the summer. A Premier League season's tough. It's tough mentally, it's tough physically, and you do need that break at the end of the season.
And when you've got players saying that, you know, that they're not going to play for England under 21s or whatever because they don't want to be burnt out, but you know the club will happily, you know, cart them off to the middle of nowhere and tell them to play a meaningless game against some League 11.
You look at someone like Harry Kane. He went on Tottenham's post-season tour, didn't he? And went away with the under 21s, and he barely had a summer, especially after the impact he had last year. And I'm sure that took its toll on him, you know, on his body. So yeah, I'd be interested to see how his season starts this year, because I think he might be one that does suffer from exactly what you've said.
You had Newcastle as well in the situation last night. I think they played on a plastic pitch, and they had players coming back from injury who couldn't play on the plastic pitch.
Well, we don't mind that, do we?
Well, no, but what's the point? I mean, what's the point in arranging games if you can't actually play in them? It just seems crazy to me. But,
Episode one of the new season, we're getting on being against modern football and the money and the commercial.
No, I'm just against stupid pre-season friendlies. That's what I'm against. What's the matter? We've got just go to Portugal. It's lovely down there, really hot. Like this time of year, it'll be boiling down there.
Scotland?
Get yourself down there.
From Scotland?
3 hours on a plane.
But Sunderland under 21s are just there in Portugal at the minute. So we'll see how they start the season, see how the first team start the season, and we'll suggest it.
Well, I've been to Portugal before. Nairn scored in the final, won that final against Sporting Lisbon. I think Roy O'Donovan scored.
There you go.
And look what happened to him.
The glory days, eh?
You know?
Yeah. It was a lad who scored under Canio against Tottenham as well.
Oh, Carlson.
Yes, exactly.
But he went all the way to Singapore on a pitch that he couldn't play on.
There's some examples of what pre-season really means.
We only played like 2 25-minute halves or something like that. That was good, wasn't it? Premier League. That was a Premier League event as well. I think they've got it. I've had it in Singapore this year. I think they didn't risk going back to Hong Kong. I remember that stadium from, I think England played a Euro 96 warm up against the Hong Kong Select
11. Oh, yeah, Drew Nil-Nil. Yeah.
And it wasn't a... Was it Sunderland keeper, former Sunderland keeper was in goal for the Hong Kong... Was it Tim Carter or something like that?
I don't know, but I know like people like Dewberry and that were playing there.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Anyway,
should we talk about some of our new signings? Mm. You call it, Gareth. Who do you leave hanging on the most? Who should we talk about first?
Well, since you've got Jack's intro up first, let's talk to Jack first.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to be talking to Jack Hussey from Rule the Roost podcast. Jack Hussey from Rule the Roost podcast is going to join us now and tell us about Yunus Kabul. Man Mountain, Chris Young reckons. Is that right, Jack?
Well, yeah, I think, he probably was. He's probably more of a man cliff nowadays, I might say, physically at least. But, yeah, he's an impressive specimen, is Yunus.
Started last season as captain, didn't he? So can you talk us through sort of his decline, perhaps, last season?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, I think. I'm pretty sure that it was, I think it was some type of player vote or something that decided the captaincy. I think Pochettino's whole thing was very much to leave it in the players' hands and he'd get to know everyone. But he does have this very stringent meritocracy, as he calls it, which I think saw Yunus fall by the wayside a bit. It started with his sort of consistent injury problems that he's had over the past few years. And he's never really hit that form that he once had, because he was a truly brilliant, I don't know if I'd go as far as say world class, but a truly brilliant defender at one point for us. But last year it just seemed as though, be it attitude or his kind of like physical restrictions, he never really seemed to impose himself in the team. And after he got dropped by Pochettino, I think the actual quote is, Pochettino actually said to him, he's not picking him because there's better players than him now. It just seemed to affect him, and there was a lot of talk about him joining like this little cabal of, you know, disgruntled players and things like that that were maybe sort of causing a few lesions in the dressing room.
We'll get the bad news out of the way first before we start looking at things through rose-tinted glasses. Tell us about the physical restrictions.
His particular restrictions. I think, like every now and again, he's had a bit of a history of being prone to lapses in concentration. I mean, that was much more so in his first spell with us before we sold him to Portsmouth. And after that point, his sort of mental side of the game seemed to be far much more locked down. But it's still there every now and again. Just falls asleep basically sometimes. And of course, like the massive one with Yunus is always his kind of lingering injury doubts. He kind of became a bit of a sick note for us after he had one horror kind of injury, like a knee injury up at Newcastle, actually, so you got them to thank for that. Where he was out for about a year, and after that point he wasn't coming back for ages. A lot of people thought he might be finished. And he sort of fought his way back, but it's still always been there. And you know, when players have had those massive injuries, you always kind of just like look at them, you always think they're always a bit cagey. They always seems like they're kind of, they're worried about if they just push themselves that bit too much, is, you know, is this when the knee goes again? Is this when a hammy goes or something like that? So I think that's something that always kind of looms over him a bit.
Michael, come to you here. The remit for Sunderland this pre-season was to bring in players who, just a few players, less players than we have done previously, who would significantly improve the playing squad. Do you think Yunus Kabul does that? I mean, my initial impression was I think he slightly improves what we have now.
I think he improves us. Definitely he's got a lot of Premier League experience, which I think is important. You know, we've got Van Arnold, Jones, who were relatively young players, so to have someone like that around him, who's still relatively young himself, he's not, for all his experience, he's not sort of coming towards the end of his career just yet. Yes, he hasn't played as much recently as we would have liked. But what you hope is it's not a sort of Jack Rodwell situation where we keep saying, oh, well, he hasn't played many games, so he'll come good, he'll come good, and we end up, you know, waiting and waiting and waiting. But I think, you know, he's got a lot of experience, and I think he will improve us, especially sort of, you'd imagine Wes Brown, although he signed a new contract, you'd imagine he's not going to play as much next season as he has done in the past. So I think just have another experienced head in our defence, it'll stand us in good stead.
I mean, we'll speak about who we think might play later on when we come back. Jack, do you think a run of games for Yunus will help him?
Yeah, big time, definitely. I think it's... I think he'll improve you. I honestly do. I think on his day, I know that's such an old cliche, but honestly, when he's at the height of his powers, he's you'll struggle to find many better defenders probably in the Premiership, at least. Well, at least I can't help but look at it with the rose-tinted spectacles of a few years back, but just before that big injury at Newcastle, it's important to stress that he was phenomenal for us, and like I say, I was erring on the side of caution towards saying he was pushing that world class bracket, but he honestly was knocking on the door of that. So there's a player in there. There really is a spectacular footballer in there. And if you can harness that, then you've got yourself a very fine defender.
Okay, Michael, we'll get on to that before we hopefully speak to somebody else about another new signing. Interesting that he said the players picked Yunus Kabul as their captain.
Yeah, I think it obviously speaks volumes for him, because to have the respect of your teammates, you know, for a captain is everything. So for him to be voted by his teammates, you know, that says a lot about the man. So you'd think that he'd come into the Sunderland dressing room and immediately have a respect that he deserves, and be a leader as well on the pitch and off the pitch, which is important.
Tom Wilcock, Lee Barker and many others, really. It's the most popular question I think we've been asked, and it's an obvious one, and I don't know if you know the answer to it. Who do you think our starting centre back pairing will be?
I mean, Quetta's had a great end of the season, didn't he? So he certainly sort of throwing his hat in the ring. But if
Kabul comes in, and the idea is he significantly improves our side, then you think he's going to...
Yeah, I think Kabul will definitely start. And then I think, you know, it's going to be a difficult one for Dick Advocaat to leave his captain out of the other side. So you'd imagine it will be O'Shea and Kabul. But
that's who I think that's who it will be as well.
I think that's probably who I would choose if I was in Dick Advocaat's shoes. I think that's probably our best centre-back pairing for certainly for the start of the season.
So, do you think that could be a phase-out thing then? If Quetta is the younger,
possibly
sort of more mobile, although he's not great. Yeah. He hasn't got great mobility, but know what I mean.
I think if you look at last season, we lost players due to suspension and injury, and you're always going to do that. So what we need is to have top-class replacements to come in and step in when people are injured, when people are suspended, people are out of form. So we're going to need 2-3 players for every position. So Quetta's form at the back end of last season was fantastic, and that, I'm sure, is in the back of Dick Advocaat's mind, that if he has to put him in, then he can perform. Whether or not it's a phasing out of any of the players, I'm not sure. I think, obviously, Wes Brown is coming to the end of his career, and yes, he signed a new deal, but I'd be surprised if we saw him play regularly in the first team. I think it'll probably be Quetta as an O'Shea, and that's certainly who I'd be going for, I think.
Still a couple more questions before we try and get
a
question.
I thought it was an interesting one from Tom Huntley, who was talking about Jermaine Defoe, how that if the club, somebody offered Sunderland 2 or 3 million quid to buy Defoe, that he'd snap the hands off, and just purely because, he says, should we be looking to move Defoe on if a decent offer comes in, because he doesn't suit a 4-3-3 and he can see him as a sub at most in Advocaat's system. So it's an interesting one, considering we talked a lot about Defoe last season and how he was one where we weren't quite sure whether he was the right player. No doubt in that he's a decent player, but whether he was the right player. And I think that question mark does probably still hang over his head, whether they'll sell him or not, I don't know, because we've got Graham in his last year of his contract, Fletcher in the last year of his
contract. There's always a plan B as well, that he's there to rely on him.
He's a different kind of player, isn't he?
I think Jermaine Defoe's probably Dick Advocaat's biggest decision and biggest problem this year, because, as you said, he doesn't really suit the 4-3-3 system. He doesn't suit to be the lone striker. And we saw last year, yes, he works hard and can do a job in those wide positions, but he's not best suited to that position. He's not the best player that we've got at the club in that position, and it doesn't suit his game at all. So it's going to be an interesting one to see how Dick Advocaat plays the Defoe situation, because you can't imagine Jermaine Defoe being happy to sit on the bench and be an impact sub, but to be playing games here and there. Whether or not Dick Advocaat changes his system to suit Jermaine Defoe, but then does that then has a knock-on effect where it doesn't suit the rest of the players. So it's an interesting one to see what he does.
Probably the one player wasn't... He said he was happy Advocaat came back. I bet he was thinking, oh, God. When he said he's staying over here.
I'm going to be playing right wing back again.
Yeah.
But I don't think you play in that right forward position next year. I think last year he did a good job. But he's not going to score your goals from there. So I think if he plays, he has to play as the top striker, the lone striker. If we do play him in there, then we have to make sure that we get plenty of support nice and early to him, and that we play a lot further up the pitch than we have done in the past. So I think all of his striking options, we spoke about it all last season, none of our players are really suited to any of the forward positions, really. Wickham, Fletcher's probably the one who's more suited to playing as the lone striker. But again, he works best with a partner alongside him, so it's going to be an interesting one to see what he does with that, especially with Lens coming in as well, because we're going to have to find a position for him.
We forgot to take a moment just to reflect on Gareth's grief
over
Virginie leaving.
That.
What are you going to do with those Virginie pyjamas whatnot?
That's an old joke. It feels like a really old joke, that one.
I was just thinking the other day that you actually put him in your all-time five-a-side team, which now seems like a bizarre...
You're making it sound like it was not my all-time five-a-side.
Well,
it was.
Five-a-side team of the moment.
No, we had all players.
It definitely wasn't of the moment. It was of all time. I'm sure you had Super Kev up front.
Yeah. I can't remember.
I can remember vividly, and you said that Virginie was the best ball-playing centre-half seen.
I definitely said that.
Can we not get it on archive? Have we not got...
It will be
I
there
think
somewhere.
I put him. I did think I put him in for comedy.
You have to
have someone like that in your five-a-side team.
In hindsight, it looks like you did do it for comedic effect, but I'm sure that
I'm still going to say that he's, he was nowhere near as bad as people want him to be. He was okay.
I think he's been made a bit of a scapegoat, to be fair. But
it seemed, I think I get the impression from a few of the older pros and stuff, tend to try to decide that he was this terrible player who'd been brought in and blocked the progress of all these fantastic young players that we've got coming through.
I don't think they should have
been in ahead of him and all this kind of thing. I think that's a little bit sour grapes there. I think that's a load of rubbish.
He did okay for a spell, didn't he? And that spell was probably about the time when you selected him in your greatest ever side.
Well, he was of the
don't
moment,
help him out
when he said he was his favourite ever player.
It was a dish of the day. You got to have it. You
preferred it when you
the thing is, right?
If you threw him in front of a bus.
You go to the same restaurant all the time, and the menu's the same. Sometimes you've got to go for the specials board.
Yeah.
And at that time, he was on the specials board. He had to come in. He had to be sampled.
Yeah, but you were the only person on the table who chose it.
And then you looked at all of our food and regretted
your decision.
No, because you're bland and generic. You're probably like one of these people who gets like potato skins for a starter, which is just chips, right?
Right.
So that's probably the thing. You went for the generic. I try to be a bit more different and exciting with my choice. And that's what's happened.
And ended up with food poisoning the next year.
Well, Gareth's food choice podcast will be coming up after this. Let's see if this new Dutch bloke will be on the specials board.
If we can get through to Kristen, we could come back after this jingle.
I was going to just cut that bit out if we could.
No. Let's see what happens. Let's like a bit of nervous tension for 10 seconds.
So if you're listening, do a drum roll back home. We might have Kristen. We might not.
Hi, this is Chris and Hannage's mobile phone. please leave your name and number and I will get back to you. Thank you.
Oh, Kristen. This is the player we wanted to
let
know about as well.
Down,
we don't even know if he's called Lens or Longs. That was going to be
let
my first question.
Down. He's let himself down. He's let himself down. World football sage, Kristen Hennage.
Mm.
And he's, you know, that might revoke. I think we christened him that and I think, it you know, it could be revoked.
Well, you know, we could we'll be
it's
on the
pre-season.
Lookout.
It's pre-season.
We could be on the lookout for another world football
expert
now.
You might have a knock.
Mm.
He's probably, like, on something important, like CNN or, yeah. You know, Sky Sports well, News or something like that. He's
bigger
probably,
fish to fry.
He's probably just doing that, isn't he?
I mean, should be having his tea. I'm not
I mean, if
that.
It's something, it's something for the first show, then, I guess. Or, yeah. You know.
Something to look forward to.
But
come
I mean,
back next week. Listen to what Christian's got to say.
I could pretend to be a Dutch football expert.
Yeah,
no, but there's loads of those sure. people
I
on
mean,
the internet.
Initially,
didn't Steve McLaren do that?
Yeah, he did. Champions League, Arsenal.
I mean, initially when we made the sign of Michael, and I'm not going to proclaim no loads about this player, but I did know that when we were first linked with him, what are you laughing at? You got
Kristen's
a text message
just sent a text saying we've got to ring him.
Should we do this live?
Shall we ring him live?
Go on.
Let's
get
ring
it
him
done.
Live.
Let's get
oh,
it
it's
done.
Like Chris Evans or one of those types, isn't it? Oh, how exciting is this? So here we go. Keep talking because obviously.
I don't know, the excitement's too much. Well, we're just watching you. It wouldn't be very good for the listeners, like, I guess.
Just gone through his
voicemail, okay.
There we
you
go.
Keep trying. Me and Michael will talk, you know, like pros. We'll fill and then you can keep
but
talking.
But how many goals are we going to give him?
I know. We've been sitting here for half an hour. That's what people don't understand, yeah.
Talk about the striker situation.
The striker situation. Conor Wickham, we say the same every year. He's defining season, Michael.
Well, sooner or later, he's going to have to either live up to his promise or you know, he's not going to be involved as much as we would like, is he? Because are we going straight? Are we going live now? We've got him on the we've got him on the line.
This is very like live.
Radio, here he is, Kristen.
Kristen,
hello. Yeah,
you can finally join us. We've been waiting around.
We've rang you about 17 times, and we've played your voicemail message out on the podcast as well. So.
Shouldn't have told him that. Left the element of surprise when he listened back, but listen,
yeah,
we best crack
you're
on because we best crack on. I mean, we wanted a Dutch expert to tell us about our new big signing. Now, I'm not saying that our old friend Kristen Hennage is a cheap replacement, but could you make your opinion? could you give us your opinions in a Dutch accent, Kristen, and make this sound more authentic?
I could, but I'm not going to.
Steve it works for Steve McLaren.
It does. No, Steve's speaking
well, it didn't
fluently.
Work, did it?
no, in fairness to Steve, he won the league there, so it's it wasn't all terrible.
So what happens if you do something? It's like here, if you do something, they like give you the freedom of the city, or you get like an OBE
like,
or something.
What it is? Just
he won the league, so they gave him a Dutch accent.
He's that far advanced. He's just thinking to understand the Dutchman, you need to become the Dutchman. I see, and then he's doing. He's not daft. He's not as daft as he looks. But Kristen, the most important question that we all want to know is: it Lens or is it Lons?
It's Lens, Jermaine Lens.
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 Yes.
That means I was right.
Yes. You didn't say Lens.
Lens, I said?
No,
you said Lens.
Connacht Lens.
No,
and
Jermaine.
It's Jermaine. There's a Jermaine.
It's a Jermaine.
Yeah,
see,
it's Jermaine.
Before was Jermaine, and people were saying
the thing
it's
is, when someone puts an E in there, you want to, like put frills on other parts of the word name, so you'd be like Jermaine, because it doesn't seem logical for you to just say it Jermaine.
Mm.
But two badly spelled Jermaines
sure
in the squad.
I'm sure Steve could give us a better idea on how to say it properly and correctly.
Yeah,
having spent time in the country.
We've already done that. We've already had a go at that.
Steve. Not me.
Let's talk about the football.
Kristen, this has been a problematic position for Sunderland since Fabio Barini left. I was just about to say to Michael there, before we got through to you, that I won't claim to know much about Lens, but I did know that when we were linked with him, I thought, front left, he's got a bit of pace. Can you elaborate on that?
I think you've hit the nail on the head a bit there. He's got a lot of pace. The problem he kind of had at PSV was that he wasn't ever really perfect for that lone forward role. He wasn't really big enough, but he was quick and direct and would get you goals. And I think, you know, it's interesting that you talk about Barini. that was kind of who jumped in my mind tactically, at least when I saw this deal go through, because I thought, well, they've missed that. They've missed someone kind of out wide who can chip in with goals, who'll get the ball into the box for whoever's playing up top themselves. And that's what he gives you. He gives you pace, gives you directness, and a bit of that speed and athleticism that I think in the final third Sunderland have kind of missed over recent years.
So can you see, you could see him arriving into the box from that left position? Because, I mean, Borini wasn't blessed with great pace or anything. He wasn't going to go past a man necessarily. Now, if Lens can do that, that's probably the icing on the cake for us. But more importantly, it's somebody else arriving in the box to help the centre forward.
Exactly. And I think the thing is, you have to kind of work out with this as well, is that it's one thing to have pace, but, you know, a bit like Charis Marias, he has pace, but can he use it intelligently? And I think Lens is someone who can. And if you look at that Sunderland forward line, if you were picking it tomorrow with everybody fit and all things decided, you would probably want him in there, because otherwise you are looking at a real lack of pace. And I think that's something that's kind of haunted Sunderland for a few years now, is that they can't really get in behind teams in the same way that their opponents can, and can't really stretch games. I think the Palace game last year was the biggest kind of example of how devastating pace can be on the break if you use that transition really quickly and really well.
Do you think there's a reason he hasn't found his way to the Premier League sooner?
Sorry, could you repeat that one again, sorry?
Is there any particular reason you think he hasn't found his way to the Premier League sooner?
There's not really one that stands out. I mean, what you've got to remember is, as well, is that his former club could offer him a lot of money. That's one of the benefits of being where they are, is that they can attract players like him, guys like Miguel Veloso, because they can give them really high salaries. Salaries that arguably compete with what the Premier League can offer. Now, the fact that the situation in the Ukraine is a little bit unstable from a political standpoint has helped Sunderland in this case. And I think the fact that, in general, the spending is ramped up again with that TV deal, Sunderland have actually been quite opportunistic with this deal. And it did impress me in that sense, because I thought, yeah, that's a little bit of kind of abstract thinking in terms of trying to target a player who you know is going to improve you, who maybe a few years ago might not have been massively interested in that move. From what I've heard, has been really convinced by Advocaat, and to be honest, it seems a lot of the players that are coming here are being sold on the back of him, guys like Dembele and people like that. They're only really entertaining someone because Advocaat's here. And so I think it's not anything to worry about, the fact that he hasn't been in the Premier League already. I think he was linked quite consistently with a few other clubs in the Premier League in the past. So, yeah, I would almost celebrate. Let yourself have a moment of joy, if you will.
Have you just done a spoiler there with Dembele, Kristen?
Well, no, in fairness, you know, to touch on the Dembele thing, the club have inquired for him. That much is true.
Yeah, but you suggested he's interested on the back of Advocaat.
Well, the thing is, from what I've heard, and I'm going to sound very Andy Burton here, from what I've heard, he does love
living in
London. How many
phones? You haven't got enough phones. That's your problem. So we tried to run you one, you couldn't get the others. So anyway, carry on, sorry.
He's very keen, or enjoys living in London, as I'm sure a lot of foreign footballers do. And so that's going to be a stumbling block for Sunderland. But the fact that he's worked with Advocaat before, the fact that Advocaat is admittedly a huge fan of him and his style of play, means that he's willing to entertain, or at least think about that move and discuss it with the club if they can agree that fee. It's just agreeing the fee with Tottenham at the minute. They've said they don't really want to sell, but as I remarked to someone the other day, why would you admit you want to sell a player? It's much better if you say you don't, because then you can drive the price up.
It's very Tottenham that, though, isn't it?
Do these players,
impossible
know,
to
do
deal
these
with,
players know that we've just built a new public square in Sunderland?
Have you not been to the Bridges?
What's the matter with these people? Honestly.
We've got two miles of beautiful coastline.
Absolutely.
That's what we were discussing before we went on, and the rest of it's a bit near. But when you get over the water, it's all right for a bit.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Just go to Ashbrook.
Yeah, go to Ashbrook, yeah. You could live in Ashbrook. He'd love it. I lived there for a bit. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
Get himself there. I mean, if he wants, if you're that close, Kristen, you know, put us in touch and we'd have a, you know, little talk through about Sunderland and why he should come here instead of London.
I've already sent him half a dozen postcards of nice parts of Sunderland and all sorts to try and help move it along. But
it hasn't been a very big postcard.
what I think is good in the wider context, though, is that Sunderland are trying to get players that, for me, have got the best years ahead of them. And for me, equally, you've seen them play and you know what they're going to give you. The likes of Dembele is already suited to the Premier League. You've seen him at his peak at Fulham. He was absolutely brilliant. I think he struggled making that move to Tottenham, as a lot of players have. We just saw Stambouli leave Tottenham for PSG this week. He was an incredibly highly rated midfielder when he arrived. So I think think in the wider context of things, that's one of the benefits you've got of getting Advocaat back for that extra year, is that he does bring a degree of clout with him. I mean, his record as a manager maybe hasn't been as exceptional as it was earlier in his career, but he's still got a very high pedigree and he's still very well thought of in the European football circles. The only problem you've got really is that it's for a year. And I think when you're trying to sell a player to move to a football club for 3 or 4 years off the back of your manager, it doesn't really help that he's only there for a year.
I guess he's got to sell him the whole thing, hasn't he? So he's got to say, I'm not going to be here for a year, but when I do go, there'll be something worth staying for. And I guess that's how they've got to play it. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, about do players actually sign for managers anymore? And there might be some do, some don't. I mean, it'd be interesting. I know that, again, I'm no Dutch football expert, but when Dembele was playing in Holland, he kind of played it as a number 10, didn't he? Sort of in behind. And but do you think he'd come in to Sunderland and play as that advanced third midfielder?
That's the one
we need, but he hasn't played there in England a lot, has he? I think for Fulham, did he play from wide at times? I'm trying to recall.
I thought he was like a box-to-box midfielder. That's the impression I always
had. But he definitely, because I remember when we were linked with Kovermans years ago, and I remember looking at videos, and I think he played in the same team as in. I'm sure it was him. It was just like putting him in all the time, playing in through balls and stuff. Loads of assists. So,
well, funnily enough, they were actually, the pair of them were on Tyneside for UEFA Cup time many years ago, and Dembele scored in that game, and that was kind of his first real kind of jump into the radar of the rest of Europe as being someone that's talented. And I mean, Advocaat's spoken very highly of him in the past. I think the biggest asset for me that he's got when you watch him is he maybe doesn't trick past players. It's not a step over or a clever turn. He just glides past people. And I think too often that's kind of what this Sunderland midfield's missed. Someone who can beat a man in a one-on-one situation. And I think certainly you could play him in that number 10 role. I think he'd be quite comfortable. Personally, I think he'd be a little bit wasted out wide, because then there's an opportunity the game passes him by, which doesn't really help the team. But I think as a third midfielder, that's not a terrible idea. In kind of a 4-3-3 that then reverts to that 4-5-1 when you haven't got the ball and gives you a bit more stability, and also allows you to break quickly. Because I think, as we saw with a few of the goals that Sunderland scored towards the back end of the season, it was that quick transition. I mean, the goal in the derby against Newcastle, it was quite literally a punt upfield, a head down, and a fantastic volley. That's what I'm expecting again with Advocaat this season. It's really quick transition football that looks to catch an opponent out.
Okay, that sounds ideal, Michael. Almost too good to be true. The reviews we've had of the two signings there, the two big signings anyway. I know we've made quite airs, and with Matthews, who haven't really had time to speak about. The front left position, that sounds great if he's going to fill that role. However, I can't get the sort of feeling that it won't quite be a successful transfer window if we don't go and get that centre midfielder, because that's been our issue for a long time now.
I think Sunderland certainly be targeting an attacking midfielder, someone to really drive on. We spoke time and time again last season about that being something that we lacked, a bit of creativity, some flair. We certainly lacked pace last year, which you'd hope that Lens would give us, but someone to break from midfield. I know I spoke a few times last year about trying to sign someone similar to Thomas Rosicky at Arsenal. If we can get Dembele, then possibly he can do that role. If not, then we have to look elsewhere to see if we can find someone capable of doing that. But I think that's certainly something that Lee Congert and Dick Advocaat will be looking at, recruiting in that area. I think when you look at our squad on paper, it doesn't look terrible, but I'm sure it's a long way from the finished article that Dick Advocaat would like to see come the start of the season. But still a little bit of time left. Obviously, they're away on tour at the minute, so you'd think that over the weekend, next week, they'll probably try to ramp up the recruitment and see if we can get some players in, because you want a little bit of time to work with them before the start of the season as well. You don't want to be signing people last minute and throwing them straight into a side where they don't really understand what's required of them.
We're going to finish up now, but there are a lot of people on Twitter, sorry, too many to go back and mention, but thanks for your questions as always. A lot of people asking what success will be for Sunderland this season.
I think successful this season, it'll be certainly to improve upon where we were last season. We don't want to be dragged into a relegation battle. I can't see us finishing, you know, sort of any higher than mid-table. I don't think realistically that's going to be Sunderland's season this year. But we need to stay away from the relegation zones, not be in a position that we've been in the last couple of seasons where we're looking for miracles come the end of the season.
Broken record, isn't it?
Well, it is, of course. Yeah. But I think we've got the right man in charge. I think he'll bring an element of calm. He exudes that, doesn't he, when he goes into press conferences. When you see him talking, he's real cool and calm, and he doesn't really put too much pressure on his players. He takes all the pressure off them and takes it all himself. So I think he'll steady the ship this year, and I think we'll see a lot more of a plain sailing season and not so up and down, hopefully.
Yeah, we could.
Some evidence excitement of something good on the pitch. Few more wins, few less draws, you know, that would be okay.
There's certain glimmers, wasn't there, last year of that, but
just something a bit brighter, just something that isn't, you know, like last ditch sort of football. Like, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's just not desperate. I want to remove that desperation from the way we play and try and cultivate something that looks quite nice and is enjoyable, so you can go to the match and go, oh, that was all right, wasn't it? And then come home and, you know, have a lovely Saturday night.
Which bar the Crystal Palace game under Advocaat we had?
I think you certainly get that from Advocaat side, more so than you did from Gus Poyet's side.
It was pretty functional. I'd like to see a little bit more, you know.
But I think it had to be functional,
yeah,
didn't
exactly
it? Because we couldn't afford to lose at the back end of the season. So I think he'll be a little bit more expansive. He'll be a little bit more attack-minded. And he'll certainly be more attack-minded than Gus Poyet was. I think with Poyet it was, well, we draw, and if we can nick a win, great. I think Advocaat will be thinking, right, well, we try and win these games, possibly against a top side. You sit back a little bit more and defend. But I think he'll be looking to win more games than possibly Gus Poyet did.
Okay, that's a wrap. Everyone happy?
Yeah, just obviously Into the Light will be back on the 6th of August, and Wiseman said he'll be back the following Monday, as usual. If you haven't subscribed to Ethan, somehow you've stumbled across this, then you can get it at various places, including wisemansay.co.uk. For Wisemansay, follow us on Twitter at wisemansaypod. And if you go on iTunes and search for Wisemansay, you'll be able to find this. And Into the Light, same really, but if you go on Into the Light, if you search Into the Light on iTunes, you'll find it there to subscribe. And if you go on the Sun FM website, there will be a page, a brand new page from last season, in a few weeks' time before the show starts on August the 6th, and you'll be able to listen online there. So there's a whole plethora and variety of options. You can listen to both shows, and yeah, 2 a week. What a treat that'll be, yeah. Again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's good to be back. Thanks for listening. Over and out.